I spoke to a White House economic advisor and a panel of women leaders about the pandemic and women in the workforce. And what I learned is the country has a lot of work to do, but this may be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to make changes.
If you care about America's middle class, you have to care about what's happening to American workers who are women and, you know, the jobs that those women are doing.
I can safely say that navigating through the challenges of COVID-19 is the most difficult situation that I have faced in my professional career.
Many people in this country have opened their eyes to the challenges that women face, both at work and at home.
I think we always have to be asking, recovery for whom? So yes, we have added successfully 500,000 jobs each month consistently, but that's not the case for women and certainly not women of color.
And I think that there is an awareness of that and an appetite to change that hasn't existed in a time that I can remember.
I'm Jeremy Siegel. This is Politico Dispatch. And today,
I'm Elizabeth Ralph. I'm deputy editor of Politico magazine, and I am the editor of Women Rule, which is Politico's journalism and events series that covers women, politics, policy, and power.
Elizabeth Ralph, on the pandemic's toll on women and the long road ahead to economic recovery.
So women left or lost at least 4.2 million jobs during the pandemic, but only about 2 million women have actually come back into the workforce, which means it's estimated that there are about 1.8 fewer women in the job market than there were before the pandemic.
It's a statistic that we've brought up several times now over the last year. We're talking about women falling out of the workforce because of the pandemic.
Recent studies show over the past year, women have lost nearly a million more jobs than men. Some have termed this trend as a she-cession.
But what's sort of not complete about that figure is that these are women who are not looking for jobs. They dropped out and they're not even considered unemployed. There are over a million other women who are technically unemployed, which means they are actively looking for jobs. And if you add those women, the total number of women who lost their jobs or are unemployed during COVID is more like 3.4 million.
Wow.
We know women were hit harder than men, and we know that women of color were disproportionately hit among the female population. So Latinas, for example, have left the workforce at rates higher than any other demographic. Participation in the labor force for Latinas aged 25 to 54 fell from 71% pre-pandemic to just below 67% in May 2021. And employment for Black women is down 7.5% year over year.
According to the December 2020 jobs report, 154,000 Black women left the labor force because of lack of employment opportunities and overwhelming, quote, caregiving demands.
This is due to a few things. Women make up a majority of workers in a number of industries that were really hit hard by COVID-19. For example, daycare, retail, service and hospitality jobs, the beauty industry, just to name a few. Mm-hmm. But secondly, caregiving duties at home fall more on women than on men, whether that's taking care of children or of aging parents, which means women have disproportionately had to leave their jobs to juggle work and these new care duties as schools and daycare shut down.
Ask any working woman with children in this pandemic, and her story is supported by the data. Of the 1.1 million workers over age 20 who left the workforce in September, 80% were women.
It's also worth mentioning there are many women at the leadership level who have decided not to quit, but to take a step back. And more women are thinking that they're going to take a step back in their careers than men are. Those decisions can have impact on women and the workforce years into the future. So these are pretty major shifts.
So, Elizabeth, as part of your work for Women Rule here at Politico, you talked to both a panel of experts and to a White House economic advisor, Heather Boucher, about what's next as we emerge from the pandemic with these clear discrepancies in the workforce. And I want to talk about what you learned from both of those conversations. First, let's start with Boucher. What did she say about what the Biden administration is doing here?
Heather Boucher really focused on Biden's commitment to the care economy, what she called the care economy. This is the investment in childcare and elder care that helps women both get to work, but also make sure that the jobs in the care economy, which we know women disproportionately hold, are actually good jobs.
So he laid this out most fulsomely in the joint session to Congress, with investments in paid leave, in childcare, in universal pre-K, alongside the investments that he laid out earlier in home care.
She said, basically, this is what you need to do if women are going to succeed in the labor force. Now, it's a little tricky at the moment. These are all policies that Biden really wanted to incorporate into an infrastructure plan because his attitude and the attitude of many congressional Democrats is that infrastructure is anything that helps the economy run. So that includes daycare centers. It includes policies that help women get to work and stay employed, whereas a lot of Republicans see infrastructure as more old school bridges and roads and tunnels type policy. So that wasn't going to cut it if he wanted to have a bipartisan infrastructure compromise. And now we know that there is a bipartisan infrastructure compromise. Those sort of investments in flexible work, family-friendly policies like childcare, paid family leave may not make their way, are probably not going to make their way into the new infrastructure plan, which means he's going to have to do that by another method.
But he has made it very clear that he remains committed to the care agenda. And, you know, the Hill has been talking about this two-track approach where the pieces that are so important around, you know, things like extending the child tax credit, around the care economy, can be part of this larger budget resolution that the Senate and House are working on.
So Boucher says passing legislation that supports the care economy is essential. You also talked with Wendy Chen-Hoon, who serves as director of the Women's Bureau at the Labor Department, Lisa Lewin, CEO of the education company General Assembly, Dr. Irma Becerra, president of Marymount University, and Erica Polmar, executive director of the Independent Restaurant Coalition. What did they all have to say about what needs to be done right now to support women in the workforce?
Wendy really backed up a lot of what Heather said. She mentioned care infrastructure as being the bridge to work.
Universal paid leave, more accessible, affordable child care, elder care, care for our families with disabilities. Those are the ways we will get back to work. That is how we will address, you know, the significant gender wage gap and employment gap right now.
She also included raising the minimum wage and brought up the well-known fact that female-dominated industries tend to pay less than male-dominated industries. So raising the minimum wage could sort of level that playing field. Hmm. Now, Lisa at General Assembly has an interesting outlook on this because her whole goal and what they focus on is training people for the jobs of the 21st century, closing the gender skills gap. You know, two-thirds of the tech industry, and these are high-paying jobs, are men. And so General Assembly is thinking, okay, how do we get women trained for these better-paying, these high-quality jobs? And how do we go into those areas where, you know, women and people of color, find those women and people of color, and then train them so that they can enter the workforce into better jobs? Mm-hmm. And Erica, coming from the restaurant industry and the Independent Restaurant Coalition, which she runs now, was founded as a response to COVID. It's, you know, as a voice for the restaurant industry as it was just decimated in the pandemic. And she mentioned, you know, the restaurant economy employs a lot of women.
So when we bring back restaurant jobs, we bring back jobs for women. Some of these positions are more flexible. So if you're getting the kids to school, I mean, it's horrible to say this, but, you know, if you're taking a night job, where are you doing that in a place where you have an opportunity to make a livable wage? It's in a restaurant.
Erica mentioned that Congress needs to do a lot more to support the restaurant industry as it tries to recover from COVID.
So thinking about all of this, there's kind of this weird dichotomy where you have these immense disproportionate economic effects, this huge impact on women in the workforce. But then as a result of the pandemic, you also have some of these sort of big ideas for more funding for the care economy, transformational things that have already been passed as a result of the pandemic, like the child tax credit in the relief package that came earlier this year. How are you making sense of all of this and what it makes you think about the future of work for women in the U.S. at this moment?
A lot of the women on the panel made a similar point, which was that this is kind of like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. They think that the devastation by the pandemic was great, and it showed just how close a lot of women and women of color are to being unemployed, to dropping out of the workforce, you know, just how close they are to being completely burned out by juggling work and home life and stress and, you know, the stress of health issues with the pandemic. And I don't think that the country has really had an awareness of that until this past year. So a lot of people see this as a really unique opportunity where people can say, okay, we can agree on certain things. And as you mentioned, you know, now there's a bipartisan embrace of things like the child tax credit. So even though both parties might not agree on everything, there are certain, you know, family-friendly policies that are starting to become more widespread. And Lisa said that she saw this as a real inflection point for women at work, you know, that companies are learning that they have to be more flexible. And she thinks, hopefully, companies looking forward are going to be more willing to look at some non-traditional candidates for jobs. You know, you don't need to have the live in San Francisco and have the typical tech pedigree to jump into a tech career. But she said people will be willing to look geographically a little bit broader, maybe into different backgrounds. So Lisa was saying that companies have changed the way that they think about the way people can work. She also said that a lot of people are changing the way they look at work. And I've noticed this too. You know, we've seen the droves of women leaving the retail industry, for example. They are less willing to stay in low-paying jobs they now see also as unsafe, you know, unfulfilling, but also unsafe. So women, I think, a lot of women are thinking about changing careers and moving into new career pathways. Wendy said another thing that was interesting. She said that she talked to big-name brand businesses who said that they endured the pandemic stronger because they had policies like paid family leave in place, whereas companies that didn't have those kinds of policies didn't do as well. In the same way that Lisa said she thought that companies were waking up to this, Wendy thinks that companies are waking up to this as well.
Elizabeth, Ralph, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you so much. It's fun to be on.
Elizabeth Ralph is the editor of Women Rule. You can subscribe to the Women Rule newsletter at politico.com/newsletters. Also, today, Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson says that hospitalizations are up among people who are unvaccinated in his state and that vaccinations are slowing down, illustrating a trend that's playing out in several states across the country. Speaking to CBS over the weekend, Hutchinson attributed the slowdown to the comfort people felt after hospitalizations initially went down when vaccinations were first doled out. He also added that vaccine hesitancy is still a barrier. Arkansas currently has one of the lowest vaccination rates in the country, and Hutchinson says incentives have not been successful in boosting numbers. And Senator Mitt Romney is criticizing former President Trump's rhetoric on the November election after Trump held his first rally since leaving the White House over the weekend. Speaking to a crowd in Ohio on Saturday, Trump continued to make false claims about a rigged election, at one point calling it the scam of the century. Romney compared Trump's remarks to WWF, now known as WWE wrestling, saying it's entertainment and not real, and that it's important to, quote, make clear that the big lie is exactly that. Today's episode of Politico Dispatch included music composed by Breakmaster Cylinder. If you like what you're hearing on the show, be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating and review. I'm Jeremy Siegel. Thanks for listening.